It's Thursday, March 24th, 2022. Our final hearing before we hit our first deadline. So we've got a few bills on our agenda to go through. Our first one up is Senate File 3531 from Senator Pratt. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And this will be the third time Senator Carlson's heard this bill. So he knows that he can answer most of the questions if I can't. Members, Senate File 3531 is a reaction to recommendation number 11 in the independent expert review from the Transportation Committee. The report notes that the state needs to be able to find innovative ways, or needed to find innovative ways during the pandemic in order to keep servicing Minnesotans and maintain safety when providing driver's licenses. The report notes that when demand for tests significantly outpaces our capacity, alternative options need to be considered. And so while the expert review recommended that we allow third-party testing in for all driver's licenses, this bill simply focuses on the commercial driver's licenses. And the Department of Motor Vehicle Services is not is not opposed to this bill. Mr. Chair, I do have an amendment I'd like somebody to move, please.
Senator Limmer. Senator Limmer moved the A8 amendment. I believe it was distributed to the members already. Senator Pratt, would you like to discuss the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. As Senator Carlson knows, when we got to state gov, there were some concerns around the rulemaking section of the bill. And when we crafted that amendment to fix the rulemaking, two provisions were accidentally removed. And this reinserts those two provisions. The first sentence basically reinserts that the commissioner must apply existing school bus testing rules unless they conflict with the bill. And then the second sentence specify certain rules do not comply to third-party CDL testers. And we never intended to remove those sections. They were passed out of transportation. DVS had a chance to see them. Those two provisions were just accidentally removed when we put in the amended rulemaking.
Senator Pratt, discussion for the A8 amendment. Members, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senator Pratt.
Mr. Chair, that's the bill, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. I also have Mr. Hauslauden from the Truckers Association if there are any questions. Beyond that, but no testifiers.
Did you have testimony or just available for questions? All right. Members, are there any questions from the committee? Senator Baker.
Mr. Chair, obviously, yes. But I was just curious, one of the concerns I have about these bills under the flag is if you're allowing the schools to also be the testers.
Senator John Hauslauden, the president of the Minnesota Trucking Association. Mr. Chair, Senator Bingham, just to clarify that under the federal guidance that this operates under, the instructor and the examiner cannot be the same person. So we have that for sure. And then secondly, under the existing statute, technical colleges already have this authority to both instruct and examine as do school buses and larger private fleets. So this is not unlike what is already allowed in statute.
Senator Bingham.
I will
push
my
vote.
And members, just for clarification, our jurisdiction today is all of five lines, line 5.11 to 5.15, discussing the immunity piece of this bill. Others have been vetted along the way, Senator Carlson, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Brack talks about rulemaking here, and the commission is not supposed to be adopting new rules or anything regarding this new legislation coming forward. Is there going to be any other costs other than what you're asking the board for the CPL, or I should say for any other costs to that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Anderson, I'm not aware of any additional costs.
Senator Pratt or Mr. Houselon, do you want to briefly speak to this immunity piece as to is this something the department has for or something that you're seeing as supportive as well in agreement?
Mr. Chair, we believe this is a department request. The legislation was modeled after what's being done in several other states. Many of our neighboring states, including Wisconsin, have this type of program already. And all we want to do is make sure that the department is held harmless if one of the testers fails to fully perform all the procedures, and then the department has oversight over the tester in order to remove their credentials if they find that tester is not doing it under the proper rules and procedures.
So ensuring that the third party tester is the one to bear the brunt of any wrongdoing.
Correct.
All right. Any further discussion? Senator Lass.
Mr. Chairman, those are technical things.
5.1 Primo is giving a head now. So, Primo, can you read the oral amendments?
Mr. Chair, members, 5.1
Under Pratt, any issues with that? Will that break the bill?
Good go.
All those in favor of that oral amendment as read by council say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. Any final comments, Senator Pratt?
Mr. Chair, I think this is as the Jobs Committee Chair, we've invested in helping move people into commercial driving careers. There are a number of nonprofits that offer these services. One in particular that we funded is the St. Paul YWCA. They have a very successful program. They've been, they're booked out for a number of sessions, and it's frustrating for these applicants to get their, to finish their training and then have to wait. You know, we've heard up to 3 months in order to get their driver's license and into a family sustaining career. So we hope that this will not only help alleviate some of the problems that we have in the supply chain backlog, but also help people move into good paying jobs.
All right, thank you, Senator Pratt. So the motion before us would be the Senate file 3531 as amended. We recommend it to pass and refer to the Committee on Finance. Senator Anderson, motion.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. So the order up to do Senator Nelson's bill next. Senate file 3364. Senator Nelson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 3364 is the Audiology and Speech Language Pathology Interstate Compact. The goal is to improve public access to audiology and speech language pathology services. It facilitates the practicing of audiology and speech language pathology across state lines, and it also allows for telehealth as well. This committee knows we face a critical shortage of workers in many fields, and having this interstate compact will greatly provide mechanisms to assist audiologists and speech language pathologists who do work in multiple states. It will ensure the ethical and legal provision of services and reduce regulatory barriers at the same time that it protects the public. And it will establish consistencies in the regulatory requirements around the provision of services. In schools and healthcare settings, these licensed practitioners help students who are suffering from injury and disease to develop and recover speech. And I would love it if we all had the time to visit Mayo Clinic and see the remarkable work that they are doing with ALS patients. Or I'd encourage you to visit your schools and see the critical work that's being done with students across our schools. But in the interest of time, Mr. Chair, I would turn over to Mr. Griffin to briefly walk through the provisions of the bill, and then I have one.
All right. Thank you, Senator Nelson. I'm going to first ask if members may refer to the summary that you have from council, and if maybe council could highlight
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Phil Griffin. I'm a lobbyist with UL Consulting representing the Minnesota Speech Language Hearing Association. If I could ask, Mr. Chairman, we could turn to our legislative chair, Mr. Jeremy Brown, who's online via Zoom, and have him just give you a quick overview of the bill and the reasons for it, and then I'll come back.
All right. Mr. Brown, I believe you're online. There we are. Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record,
thank you, Chairman. My name is Jeremy Brown. I'm a speech language pathologist.
You are not, your audio is not coming.
Oh, it's showing that it's working on this end. So can you hear me? Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My apologies. I was speaking with Mr. Brown via the computer here and texting. He was having trouble hearing us, so he asked if we could speak a little louder. For me, that's not a problem. Mr. Chairman, members, the provisions of Senate File 3372, I direct you to the attention, direct your attention rather to some limited areas. This bill does not in any way change or limit the liability of licensees or the Compact Commission under Minnesota law. Prior to the hearing, we engaged in discussions with the state's trial bar, and they did not raise any objections to the bill before you. Section 7 of the bill sets forth the adverse actions, and I gave you the wrong file number and the author is pointing that out to me. My apologies. I was trying to type too quickly, too late last night. But the bill number is 3364. Section 7 of the bill sets forth adverse actions provisions under the compact and leaves in place the authority of the home state to deal with licensure violations while allowing remote states to take actions to protect their residents. Section 8 of the bill creates the framework for the compact commission, and this includes provisions for qualified immunity, defense, and indemnification. I will note that these protect members of the commission while carrying out their duties and acting in good faith, but does not protect them from intentional, wanton, or willful misconduct. Section 9 creates the data system required to create the commission, giving them needed assurances that remote states' licensed practitioners are indeed qualified and current in their home states. Mr. Chair and members, this is a quick overview, and I know legal counsel's already given you some idea in her document of what goes on here. If there are questions, Ms. Kalfas, the interim legal counsel for the compact, who is an employee of the Council of State Governments, is online and would be happy to answer questions. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today, and I hope that Mr. Braun is able to be with us. Otherwise, I'll tell you that this is a very good bill, and I'll give you a couple more things that he would have said.
Try again with Mr. Braun. Apparently others that are also remote were hearing you. For some reason the audio was coming into the room here. So Mr. Braun, if you're there, let's try again.
Can you hear me now? You can't hear me now. Can others online hear me? Give me a wave. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I know that the committee is staff is going to try one quick thing here.
All right, you want to try one more time, Mr. Braun? Apologies for the technical difficulties.
All right, can you hear me now? No.
So there is apparently an audio problem in our committee room here.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lance, well observed. The irony is not lost on us. Mr. Chairman, if I could just speak for Mr. Braun for a moment. If I could. Thank you for your patience. Mr. Braun is a speech language hearing pathologist in southeastern Minnesota, and he would have told you today were he able that this bill would give him the ability to deal with the students that he interacts with and has not been able to interact with due to the pandemic. The borders of our states sometimes interfere with the ability for students to get to teachers and do things. He has students who live in Iowa and cannot see him on a regular basis, and so sometimes he goes across borders. During the pandemic, he was unable to do that because he doesn't hold a license in Iowa. And this is the kind of thing that we're trying to help with this kind of bill. You will also hear the same thing from the people who practice in healthcare settings when their patients are away or moving. It's a problem, and people like to maintain the practitioner they're working with. We would urge you to pass this legislation. If there are questions, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd be happy to address them.
Thank you, Mr. Griffin. So, Senator Nelson, do you have someone else planning to testify?
Mr. Chair, no, I have no more testifiers.
Any discussion of the bill? Senator Grego.
Are you talking about reciprocity?
Mr. Chairman, members, Ms. Kalfas is on the line and can give you the exact numbers. I believe we have 8 states currently across the country that are participating in the compact. Our goal, like many compacts that I've worked on, is to start and get everybody involved across the 50 states, but it does take a while. And I would turn to her if you want more specifics, but suffice it to say right now, none of the bordering states have passed their legislation yet. This compact was just formed a couple of years ago.
So we can try to go to Kalfas. We'll see if remote audio problems are for everyone in our room or not. Let's give it a shot. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear me?
Mr. Chairman, members, yes, this is similar to compacts that you've worked with, including the one you passed last year for psychologists.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifiers here, this is much like the nurses' compact.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It has the same goals, which is to increase access and allow employees the ability to follow their patients, whether they are providing telehealth or their patient's winter and warmer climate, or their patient goes away to college. So it has the very same goals, and it is the same concept, which is an interstate concept.
Okay.
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 Senator Bingham, thank you for that support and understanding so well the importance of the continuity of care. Just to provide some comfort to you, I would encourage you to look at page 2, line 1 and 2, and I'll just read the full sentence for you. The compact preserves the regulatory authority of states to protect public health and safety through the current system of state licensure, and that will remain.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bingham is correct. I'm being corrected in the comment that I made. I said 8 states, and I meant to say 17. And there's a bill also sitting on the desk of the governor of Iowa waiting to be signed, and that would be one of the border states would be in the compact.
All right. Thank you.
have a question for council. The reference to state statute, reference to 148.525. Tell me what that is.
Ms. Brinkhall.
Mr. Chair, that reference is to the newly established compact under section 2. So you'll see at line 1.17, it's 148.525, so essentially the conforming change to the roadmap is the same steps to where the pursuant to the compact.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, let's get in section 1, starting with
I'm going to note that I noticed that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I noted that as well about purposes. We typically do not put those into statute. I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Griffith or our counsel at CSG to answer your question specifically if it's required.
Perfect. Mr. Chairman, I don't think that the purpose language is necessary. It is a part of the compact, but that's why we included it in the drafting.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We will do our best to track down that answer while we're through texting here. But I do want to mention one thing, Mr. Chair. I understand that we usually do not do purpose statements, although we have made exceptions for compact. So maybe there's a reason to make an exception for this compact. But my only concern is on, I think there's some very important language on line 2.1. through 2.2, and that is what I shared with Senator Bingham. I think that is very important language to keep in the bill. The compact preserves the regulatory authority of states to protect it, or if you just want to leave it, and if you don't want to say to protect, if you just want to leave it after, it preserves the regulatory authority of states. I do think that's important, and I would consider the committee's thoughts on that. I know that's an important issue.
More discussion on the oral amendment, Senator Bingham, and then Senator Lass.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You remember that thank you. We do have an answer, and I will read this to you from the CSG, Ms. Caleb. We prefer to keep it regarding this purpose language. We prefer to keep it, but we do not have to. You are correct. The purpose has no teeth. It's aspirational also.
All right. Thank you, Senator Nelson. Any further discussion to the oral amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the oral amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chairman and members, Senator Limmer, I'm at a loss for words, which, as you know, is an unusual situation. I am not familiar enough with the inner workings of the compact to give you a definitive answer. If I could beg for assistance, I'm seeing typing going on my computer. I've never done this in a committee before to communicate with witnesses remotely via my text, and I apologize.
Oh, can you hear me?
Senator Nelson. Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Senator Limmer, I can't exactly answer your question, but I can tell you that we do know it would be consistent with state regulation of auditory speech language pathology licensure practice. So while we don't know exactly what that is in line 3.7 and 3.8, it does tell us that it must be consistent with our state regulation. So I hope that provides some guardrails. It could be nothing that is not, it could not be anything inconsistent with our state regulations.
I saw a new table getting plugged into the computer there at the desk, so I can get one more shot if a remote testifier can hear me and see if we'll be trying in the room and correctly connect the audio here. But there's someone wishing to try to respond to that question.
Can you hear me, Mr. Chair? You can hear me?
Can't hear you. No. Sorry, Ms. Kalfas, Mr. Chairman. She has typed to me that it is limited to Senator Limmer's question, is limited to implementation and administration of the compact and only in ways which can narrowly be authorized by the compact. I don't know if that's helpful, Mr. Chairman, or not. Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Lass would agree with me. It's the reasonable man principle.
Well, thank you, Chairman. Necessary to be someone appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lass, if I might, I just would point out that we are not changing the scope of practice in Minnesota. That remains untouched. This is strictly for the work that is being done with the, within the Compact Commission.
The rest of the phrase of being consistent with state regulation, correctly state that in your mind, Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Members, any further discussion? Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair,
Senator,
I would like to call next another testifier who could answer that.
All right.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Carlson, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Carlson. Mr. Chairman and members, Joel Carlson, I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice, and I did sign up to testify because I have complained about several of these in the past, and I didn't want you to think I was getting soft. Senator Wimmer, as I read this, and this is what I was going to testify to, this is a much better construct than what we had in SIPAC. And as you read the immunity section, as we read it and as I understand it, this is a more common form of governmental immunity and liability. So if you keep reading, you know, under 466 or Chapter 3 in Minnesota, officers, agents, and employees of local government or state government are immune when they're doing their job. And then the state indemnifies and holds them harmless when there is a claim that is made and is paid. That's how this is set up here. SIPAC was very different. There was absolute immunity in that bill. You couldn't hold anyone accountable, and we complained about it strenuously. But if you read all three of these sections, and I would point you to on 16.16, they not only indemnify and hold them harmless, but they will be responsible for any amount of settlement or judgment that's obtained. That's how government liability works in Minnesota. That's what we had hoped SIPAC would do. So I appreciate the question, and I'd love to disabuse you of your suggestion about tort reform. But this bill is written in a way that is consistent with governmental liability. And I told Senator Nelson before the hearing, I don't want to attach opposition to her bill by saying our organization supports it. But this is a much better written bill than we've had in the past. And so we appreciate the question. That would be our comments about that section.
Further discussion. Senator Lyons.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the same theme, maybe Mr. Carlson can help me as well. Maybe the exceptions and the potential local on this time.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Latson, excellent question. Those intentional and willful conduct exceptions, which we have in Minnesota law, are also negligent. And so we feel if there is a claim that is made and the employee was acting in an intentional way, that you would still find liability on the commission. And that is how we read this and how we want to read this. And I would point to examples of police misconduct where it's intentional and proven to be intentional, but there's still liability for the city. It is a similar construct. And so I do not want to provide a loophole for anyone. And I have been in front of this committee before on those situations where it is a workplace harassment claim that is maybe intentional, but it's also negligent. And we want to hold them accountable for their officers and employees when that occurs. And we think this is pretty close to what Minnesota has. It's not exact, and we don't have any case law developed as it relates to this. I think it's an excellent question, but we feel better when they say they're going to be responsible for any amount of settlement or judgment.
Senator Lyons.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I can, it was fault and the ambit of intentional.
It would be negligent and also intentional. That's what we want to read, yes. I know there is a distinction.
Concerned about negligence claim that might not be intentional.
Mr. Chairman and members, the employee may be immune, but the commission is not. There's liability to the commission.
Any further discussion?
What line?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, if I might just go back to your previous question and say that it's our goal in this legislation to confer no less immunity than the state of Minnesota currently has. And we believe this language does that. The question on who's covered by mediation is member states and the commissioners only.
Any further discussion? Being none, Senator Nelson, do you have any final comments for us?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank the Civil Law Committee for giving us such a good once-over. It gives us great confidence that things do not escape without getting the due scrutiny that they need. I would encourage a yes vote, Mr. Chair, for what your next move is on this. I think it's clear that this will be helpful to provide access to patients, students recovering from accident, injury, disease, in acquiring speech. And we saw right here today how difficult it was when we couldn't hear the speech of people that we needed to rely upon. So I would encourage a yes vote, or however you plan to proceed. I'm not sure what the path is on this bill, Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson, my understanding is it's going to the State Government Committee. So the motion for us will be that Senate File 3364 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the State Government Committee. So we'll make the motion.
So
moved. Thank you. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
All right, next is Senate File 3355 at the Senator Abler bill. He is caught up in another committee at the moment, and so the bill will be presented by Senator Johnson.
Okay, all right.
Senator Johnson,
I'll take that. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that we're tight on time, so I'll compress this conversation to a little bit tighter time frame as we talk about this dead subject of compacts. Mr. Chair, I do know that Senate File 3355 does have one formal amendment, but I have a sneaking suspicion we're going to have another one coming up here as we begin the conversation. So with that, I did agree to take this over from Senator Abler as he was occupied in another committee right now. So I will not add to the conversation, but I will instead ask that you recognize the testifiers today in discussing.
Senator Johnson, did you want to do the A1 amendment first?
We certainly can.
Senator Johnson moves the A1 amendment. Pretty simple.
I think it's very, very self-descriptive there. So, change of the conjunction.
Before any third-hand discussion, A1 amendments? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. So, to the second part, are you Mr. Heidwell?
Yeah.
All right. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself to the record and then we'll begin.
Sure. Chair Matthews, members of the Senate Civil Law Committee. My name is Dr. Tom Hegblum. I'm an assistant professor at the Hazel Betty Ford Graduate School addiction studies. We train the next generation of mental health and substance use disorder counselors. I also serve as the legislative chair of the Counseling Association. We represent approximately 3,000 licensed professional and licensed professional clinical counselors in the state of Minnesota. I'm honored to talk a little bit more about Senate File 3355, which is another compact bill in front of you today. This one focusing on professional mental health counselors. Professional counselors are currently licensed by independent boards operating in each state, and holding a license only allows that individual to practice in their home state. This practice has certainly worked well in the past, but as we all have experienced with the rapid growth of telehealth and the interconnectedness of our society, more expansive privilege to practice is needed. The licensure regulations as they exist can contribute to hardships for both professional counselors in Minnesota and the clients that they serve. As it stands, licensing regulations do not allow for professional counselors to provide services to clients who are not physically present in the state of Minnesota at the time of the counseling session. If a client is on a work trip or vacation or attending college, perhaps snowboarding, or has even been relocated due to military service, counseling services cannot be provided to that individual until they return to the state of Minnesota. This certainly creates challenges, as we just discussed, in continuity of care when therapeutic relationships are started and stopped over and over again. The ultimate person that loses is the client. Similar to other compacts, the counseling compact bill will allow professional counselors to seek the privilege to practice in other counseling compact member states, fixing disruption in continuity in mental health care. Four states have passed the compact: Maryland, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. Florida, West Virginia, and Utah have bills on the governor's desk waiting for signature. And about 15 other states, the closest one to us is Iowa, have legislation that is currently pending. We hope Minnesota will join the list in the very near future. In addition to allowing professional counselors the opportunity to serve clients not physically located in Minnesota, the compact will also reduce barriers that limit life-saving mental health care for those located, especially in rural communities, by improving access. It will allow counselors to provide specialized care to clients who might not have access to treatments for specific conditions as well, perhaps eating disorders, and even when in need of culturally responsive and culturally specific care. Finally, the Counseling Compact can create copious opportunities for expanded practice for professionals living on or near the state border, particularly when other states enact this legislation. This could dramatically improve workflow for professional counselors in medium to large-sized border communities such as East Grand Forks, Moorhead, Duluth, and the Twin Cities metropolitan area. The Counseling Compact Bill is a budget-neutral initiative that is endorsed by the Minnesota Board of Behavioral Health and Therapy, or the DBHT. The DBHT will maintain a high level of regulation and oversight of the counseling profession in Minnesota with the compact enacted. Should a counselor violate laws and statutes in the context of the license, like this licensing board in Minnesota will maintain responsibility for oversight of any investigation or disciplinary action. So ultimately, this bill expands professional counselors' opportunities to provide life-saving care while improving access to mental health treatment within Minnesota and across the country. We do have legal counsel attending virtually, so unfortunately, that's not going to help. But we'll certainly take note of any questions that I cannot specifically answer.
Thank you, Dr. Heikula. Senator Pickup.
So I think we're going back to the same thing.
create a oral amendment for deleting Article 1 in the bill, 1.10 through 1.15. Discussion of the amendment. Senator Anderson.
Yes, I know.
Sure, yeah, so colleague has been in touch with legal counsel. It's okay if that is.
Thank you. Any further discussion of the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Opposed say no. Motion fails. Any further discussion to the bill? Senator Lats.
Mr. Chair, I remember that that change seems technical and fine, that whole like 24.9 or 9
see the text that says it's probably okay.
It's rousing vote of confidence.
Well, based upon the text, Mr. Chairman, our excuse.
Greenwald would read off the oral amendments for us.
Chair members, 8.1.29. The board disputes such.
Discussion to that oral amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion prevails. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Emergency combat or licensed counselors. I'm guessing that your industry has a shortage of individuals in this field. And I know that in other professions where there's a shortage, they are making exceptions to allow some training or towards becoming that professional counselor or whatever it may be. I just wondering what is happening in your field.
Yeah, I would love to answer that question. What I can share is there is not exceptions being made to allow people to enter the field more quickly than is necessary to develop the appropriate training and awareness to serve as a professional counselor. Most licensure boards require specific education requirements set forth by an accreditation body called the Council for Counseling Education Council for Accreditation of Counseling and Related Educational Programs and Licensure Boards follow those specific standards when considering granting a license. So there's no deviation there. I have a colleague where I work, and her role is to look at all of the licensure requirements in every single state and make sure that our curriculum aligns with those licensure requirements. Every single state, I look at these lists with her, are thorough with specific needs and expectations regarding the education piece, but also the professional practice, practicum and internship that is needed to develop the skills. So there's no shortcuts being taken. It's work whatsoever.
Senator Anderson.
I hope that you're set to that. The reason I bring it up is because I know what our school districts provide. Areas that I represent, they're begging for teachers, but they're also begging for substitute teachers. My stepdaughter in law was consulting with the principal of the school about a month and a half ago. He's asking how things are going. It seemed like she's a little frustrated with what was happening in the classroom. And she said, people and the principal said, public. Licensure to become a teacher. She can have a four-year degree in business, even though some of her classes were disappeared. Could be lined up with teaching. And they called her class dean and said, I'm really interested in becoming a substitute teacher. And she's been teaching now for days without even really putting an application to do this. But they are so tired. So I'm just asking the same question that her profession, because I see it not only.
Senator Limmer, it is the licensure exam that's required for the LPCC license, which is the license that would be part of this compact, the National Clinical Mental Health Counselor's Exam, NCMHCE, and it's the comprehensive exam that is used across the country for professional mental health counselors. The curriculum that is identified underneath there, those areas are consistent with the KCRAP, the accreditation body, standards. And even though states don't necessarily require a KCRAP accreditation from a graduate program for licensure, they typically align the licensure standards with KCRAP accreditation standards because it creates consistency across the field.
Further discussion on the bill. Any further discussion? Seeing a couple more testifiers. Get through, Mr. Costin, if you have something to add on this. So, Mr. Dean, thank you for your patience.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews and members. My name is Matt Dean. I'm from the Heartland Institute, and I'm here just to speak to a couple portions of this bill. Number one, I think most of the portions of the bill were covered that I was going to cover by the earlier testifier. One thing I just wanted to point out, this is, this compact is a little bit different in that this is triggered by the 10th state that enacts it. So when you have nine states who enter the compact, it is not in effect on the day the 10th state enters, all 10 become active. It's very good for patients because you have more access. It's very good for providers because it multiplies by at least 10 the number of states that you can practice in. So it's good for recruiting providers to the state. It's very good for patients because it allows them to have access to providers in at least nine other states. It's good for the economy because we can recruit people to the state for either themselves or their spouses for them to be able to practice here. So it's good for patients, it's good for providers, it's good for the state. And also just from what your job is, what to kind of weigh that together, access and patient safety are always the thing you weigh. I think Senator Bingham brought that up and brought up some good questions with regard to that. And the other states that I've testified on with this, the compact is really set up in a way to manage that, I think, rather successfully. I'm going to abbreviate my testimony because I know you're tight and it's deadline time, but I'm also going to forward you research and commentary on this for this and other compacts that might be helpful for you, and also I want to be helpful in any other way I can. With that, Mr. Chair and members, thanks for letting me go to the committee, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much. Any final discussion from the committee? Senator Johnson, any final comments? Senator Council, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair. I think it's all been said. So appreciate the time.
All right. With that, Senator Johnson moves that Senate trial 3355 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on State Governments. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Chair, and speaking of compacts, I have a committee that deals with a lot of compacts, so I could bring you a lot of good stuff. But, back to the bill at hand and what we're at. So, yes, Mr. Chair, last week we did a lot of discussion around a bill with number 3463, Senate file, and then we also had Senate file 36 today. I would like to have you offer the A1 delete all amendment to Senate file 3636, and that will get the bill in the form we would like. And if you want me to speak to it after you introduce it, I can do that too.
Thank you, Senator Vega. Thank you, Senator Vega. To the A1 amendment, Senator O'Keefe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll start out with the high level. I've got some more notes, but I don't know after the day you've had how far you want me to go into this. So members, the A1 delete all amendment that we just just moved to bring before you. This amendment moves the heart of Senate file 3463 that we spent a lot of time talking about last week.
into this amendment, plus some additions. We took into account what was brought up through conversations with you, the members, and a couple items in the 3636 bill. So we've combined everything to a point where we believe all the stakeholders, you as the members that ask questions would be satisfied with what's in this bill. So in addition, the amendment contains addressed the concerns by you as the members and also those that were brought up by the testifiers in last week's hearing. And then retaining a few of the pieces again from Senate File 3636. We have met as a group, and that being myself and the House author and stakeholders earlier this week to talk about the bills. And all of these conversations have led to what you see before you now in the A1 amendment. There are a couple things yet that we will be addressing at the end of this today. I would ask that you are able to pass it and send this to Commerce, which will be the next step. And one of those I will just highlight here before I go to questions, but had to do with the fact that early on section 3 of the A1 amendment now, it's the same language as we had, but we are proposing to work with the Commissioner of Commerce. Everything in here is working with Commerce as far as the registrations go and the filing of the surety bonds. We have since found out that there might be a little different avenue that follows. It still sounds like Commerce is going to be part of it, but also involving the Secretary of State's office because they do a lot of the business filings. They're familiar with a lot of those things already. We referred last week to 3 states that have done all of this already, which took the NCOIL language and this new language that we are proposing. 2 of the states use their Secretary of State's office, and 1 state used their Department of Commerce. So it just depends upon what fits into our particular states. So we're looking at, Commerce still being a part of it and probably incorporating Secretary of State, but we will be working on that some more and have details finalized by the time we get to Congress. So with that, we addressed some of the issues related to paying the employees. There was part of paying commissions or finder fees and stuff that got tightened up so that the business needs to be able to pay their employees, but at the same time, they're not going to pay to have somebody on the street just headhunting or, doing those type of things. So anyhow, maybe I'll stand for questions quickly. If you'd like, I can go further, but it's up to you. We also have Mr. Deere with us today who participated last week also to help answer questions also.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for committee? Senator Graham.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, thank you for the stakeholders. This is a lot of work in progress. You've already addressed the compensation side of things, what it sounds like. One thing is
thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Bingham. And I'm just looking for the quick notes because that was definitely something we did. It was so that it's, I jump around and I shouldn't do that. I'm just looking here. Part of it was, pardon me, Mr. Chair, where did you?
It's on page 13 of the A1 amendment.
You know what? You are correct because I had.
Thank you, and yes, I had followed the same thing, and it's so that if minors are involved in a sale, and of course we had the guardrails that first you had your parent or guardian that had to be involved, and we also had attorneys, and the court had to, you know, approve it. But this also that makes note that it's a direct benefit to the minor, so that those parents or guardians, or they don't get together and decide that an addition to the house or something that would be unrelated to the benefit of that minor, you know, they can't do that. If there is something that is directly needed by the minor or a benefit to them, then it goes through, and we've got the other guardrails that are in place so that they just can't, you know, do something to take the money and ball it and use it inappropriately. So I think the guardrails that we've incorporated into this language now addressed those concerns last week, so that we don't want to shut it off, because as we last week, there was a couple of examples of why they would propose to get into the settlement, but we want to make sure that they're very legit, and then again, that they benefit the minor.
Any further questions from the committee? Senator Lats.
Stakeholder committee,
Senator. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Latt's word is everything I've received is yes. They were presented with the A1 amendment, and we comments made at the end of our meeting on if it was what Tuesday night or whatever. What we had in Senate File 3463, they really liked with just a few changes. We've incorporated those, and I have not heard any opposition. I would, you know, if there's anybody that wants, that was part of our group that has something other than that, I'll welcome it. But as far as I know, everybody right now is happy with what we've got here in the A1 amendment. With a few little pieces that I have talked about already is how we're gonna finalize the last step as far as the registrations and who's gonna do it.
I think the word to me is that they're very close, and I've seen some buzzing around the back. Perhaps get some brief descriptions from some of the stakeholders. But since we're on deadline week, we have gonna loom out what we had anyway. So if you want to come over first, Mr. Deere.
Thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to
identify yourself to the record.
My apologies, Brian Deere, the executive director. The National Association of Settlement Purchasers. I just wanted to jump in very quickly to say that we've had very constructive conversations so far. There are still a few minor points that we're going to work out and we're starting discussions on with other stakeholders, but we're making great progress. But I don't think we're about, I would say, 95% of the way there with our discussions, but we're hoping we're on the right path for that class.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman, Joel Carlson, Minnesota Association for Justice. I would echo those comments. We have some points that need to be worked out. The language on the minor settlement is not quite there yet, because if we are going to allow them, we want to put guardrails in that any sale would have to benefit the minor. It would have to be for their medical or health and welfare needs. Seen where the guardian may try to sell them or something that might not benefit the minor, might benefit themselves. So those are a couple of details that need to be resolved between the House and Senate bill, the Senate or the House passed their bill to the floor yesterday. And so we've got a few points that are different between the two bills that we're all working in good faith. There's just a few points on factors, remedies, and how we handle the minor settlements that we need to work out.
Carl, Senator Grego.
Mr. Chairman, you know, in
further discussion? Still have the A1 matter before us. All those in favor of adopting an A1 amendment to Senate File 3636, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Any final discussion on the bill from committee members? Senator Hockey, do you have any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've had a lot of conversation and testimony on this already. I just appreciate what you guys have done. The only comment I didn't make earlier, now that the A1 has passed, I should have mentioned that we adopted the A3 amendment last week. It's all inclusive in this A1 delete also. It's all been brought together. So with that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator Bingo. On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails and the bill is passed. Thank you, Senator Huckabee, and thank you to everyone that's been working on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No further business before the agenda. We now stand adjourned.